Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that is all about forgiveness because, well, we live in the real world. That doesn't mean that we expect the same from the characters in the movies we watch. It all depends on the situation the filmmakers set up for us. This week, we'll be looking at two films that feature women being confronted by and then reacting to devastating events. The first, Pieces of a Woman, stars Vanessa Kirby portraying a character who experiences an expectant parent's worst nightmare. The second, Promising Young Woman, follows a character portrayed by Carey Mulligan, who is the dictionary definition of dangerous, at least to men. Let's begin this week's show by looking at a film that is already receiving Oscar attention. That attention is being directed at Vanessa Kirby, the English actress who is the titular character in the Netflix film Pieces of a Woman, directed by Cornel Mandrusco from a script by Katya Weber. Kirby plays Martha, a woman whose birthing experience goes horribly wrong, leaving her to deal with the aftermath in a way that negatively affects her relationship with her partner, played by Shia LaBeouf, and perhaps even more with her mother, played by Ellen Burstyn. The problem is that Martha struggles by pulling inside, shutting everyone out, and she resists any effort to force her into dealing with the emotional trauma in the ways that more comfortably fit everyone else's needs. Pieces of a Woman then asks two basic questions. How do we own our personal pain, and what are our responsibilities to those around us? Not that Weber's script, though reputed to be drawn from real life, handles everything in a believable manner. Lawyers may cringe during one particular courtroom scene, but Kirby is outstanding as Martha, especially during one of the most disquieting birthing scenes ever filmed.
And I want to get to that scene eventually because I think it's the moment in Pieces of a Woman that I think every review is going to bring up. And it's kind of typical of this filmmaker, Mandrusco, who really seems to craft his stories around these big set pieces. So you had his kind of breakout movie, White God, which was this revenge thriller starring dogs. And there's this, you know, this great scene at the end where it's this wave of dogs, you know, running down the city streets. And then his follow-up was called Jupiter's Moon, which we actually hosted at the Spokane International Film Festival, which has these kind of Inception-like scenes where kind of gravity and physics kind of fold in on themselves. And then here in Pieces of a Woman, which I think is probably the first movie that most Americans are going to see from this filmmaker because it's on Netflix, the big set piece is the one that you mentioned, this birthing scene, which goes on and on in one uninterrupted take. I think it's something like 24 minutes. And it's really intense and it's really tough to watch. And it just goes on and on and on. And I have seen some critics kind of call it distractingly showy, too much of a gimmick, but it actually worked for me. And I honestly don't know if I would have noticed that it was all in one take unless I hadn't been told in advance that there was going to be this big scene, because I've seen it written about before I watched this movie. So I was looking for it, but I was pulled into the drama of that moment. And I understand why he wanted to film it that way, because you get, you know, this kind of real-time sensation of something that seems to be going perfectly well and then collapses in a matter of moments. But I think beyond that sequence, and I think beyond Kirby's performance, which is being rightfully lauded, I don't know if this movie has much more beyond that. Not that there isn't a lot of truth and emotional power in some of the moments that happen, but the whole second half of this movie just kind of feels like a lot of kind of dumb plotting. I mean, the business of whether the midwife that delivered the baby is guilty of manslaughter, and this, you kind of alluded to it, but this big speech in the courtroom, and then the whole affair that Martha's boyfriend is having with her attorney, who also happens to be her cousin. I mean, who cares about any of that? I thought it was so strange that it decided to focus on the manslaughter charges of the midwife when I wanted to be spending more time with the Vanessa Kirby character, although I think I understand why they thought that it needed to be in the script, but it didn't quite work for me. And then you have Ellen Burstyn as her mother, who also has her big Oscar moment speech, which as tremendous an actress as she is, it did kind of feel like a big Oscar speech. So there's really good stuff in this movie in Pieces of a Woman. There's also a lot of stuff where it does kind of feel like they're going for big emotional moments and it's either going to work for you or it's not. This was sort of like a 50-50 for me, but the parts that worked, worked painfully well. And obviously I've never experienced something like this, but I think the movie does kind of try and make you feel what it would be like to go through something like that. And I admire it for that.
Nathan, I agree with everything that you've said, because this movie was sort of the best of times and the worst of times in some ways, because of course, putting on my lawyer hat here, the whole trial, the whole litigation oriented toward the substitute midwife, who, by the way, is played by Molly Parker. So in Pieces of a Woman, you know, we do have these top-notch performances, I think, across the board. The problem is here, I mean, that case would have been getting to trial when they're subsequent children, if they choose to have them, would be in college. I mean, this all happens within a matter of, you know, a few weeks. And you're like, oh, well, that's really interesting. I don't know what state or what planet this trial docket is situated. So that's a problem. And then it just doesn't play out as a normal trial would. And I think that's, you know, that just rings so false. It really takes away from other aspects of this. And the other problem was too, and maybe this was purposeful, I mean, you really don't see at any point why these two people are together as a couple. Opposites attract, as we well know, but this was too extreme in some ways, I think, to see Shia LaBeouf's character and the Vanessa Kirby character get together and co-parent. I mean, he was nice to her, I think, through much of the film, but it just didn't work. I thought that the scenes involving the mother-daughter things were very realistic. Just saying, just putting it out there. I haven't experienced childbirth, but I have experienced, I think my mother has said some of those precise things to me or my sister. And speaking of sisters, I don't even know what that woman was doing in the movie. I mean, she had nothing to do at all. And I think that they could have made a bigger deal of that somehow, because we do have all these women characters playing different roles, like the attorney seductress, please. But I think there was an opportunity for, you know, the sister to play a different role or take this in a different direction. So Nathan, I agree that this had some really notable things, and especially Vanessa Kirby's performance. I think most Americans will probably recognize her from The Crown, the Netflix series where she played Princess Margaret, and she did a great job with that, better job
here. Or like me, you recognize her from Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Where she was Jason Statham's sister who fell in love with Dwayne Johnson. But
of
continue.
Course. Yeah, The Rock. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the acting, because, I mean, Kirby is terrific. There's no doubt about that. And I agree with you about the scene, the Oscar-grabbing scene with Ellen Burstyn. But it's the smaller moments. It's the little things that she says that Mary Pat was talking about, the way she criticizes Martha, the way she just, you know, insinuates her and tells her that, you know, she's not doing this grief thing the absolute best way. And that puts more pressure on a woman who is, I don't know if it's fair to say she's emotionally stunted. She's emotionally reserved to the point of almost catatonia, because
I think she's traumatized.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. But everyone's trying to pull her out. Right. So, I mean, the acting is all as good, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Shia LaBeouf, because I think he's one of the most natural actors out there today. And you know, there are headlines that say terrible things about him as a person in his real life, but as an actor, I think the guy can do no wrong. I mean, I think he's perfect as the Sean character, even given the fact, as you say, Mary Pat, it's like apples and oranges. What is this working class guy doing with this woman, the upper class executive of some nameless company who's the daughter of a Holocaust survivor?
Well, and the only problem with his personal life is there is one scene in this film that's sort of the counterpoint to the birth scene, which involves their trying to be physically intimate with one another, you know, post experience. And that was a little cringeworthy in view of what we know. I mean, it would have been anyway, but I think under those circumstances, life has spilled into art, and that is potentially a problem for him going forward.
Yeah, I think cringeworthy is a good word to leave with pieces of a
word. Yeah, I sort of wanted his character to buzz off so that I could spend more time with the Vanessa Kirby character, but instead we got this dumb subplot with Sarah Snook from Succession, who I like a lot, and I think that she's also kind of wasted in this movie. So there's a lot of really good stuff in this movie. I wish that it had been kind of pruned into a more kind of coherent whole. Pieces into a more coherent whole. You see what I did there?
Ooh, yes, we do. That was Pieces of a Woman. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movie 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Well, there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Promising Young Woman. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When you consider the future, please consider Spokane Public Radio in your estate plans. Your gift to the SPR, Fund for the Future, Endowment will ensure that access to real news, meaningful conversations, and great music will continue forever in our communities. One of the most impactful ways listeners can help is through planned gifts. Details are available from the business office at Spokane Public Radio, your tax accountant, your attorney, or the Inovia Community Foundation, formerly known as Inland Northwest Community Foundation. More information at SpokanePublicRadio.org/membership. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Pieces of a Woman. Let's now move to Promising Young Woman. That film title is both accurate and ironic, since it applies to a character named Cassandra, played by Carey Mulligan, who, though once a promising medical student, is now a somewhat lackadaisical coffee shop barista by day and determined predator by night. Written and directed by British actress-turned-director Emerald Fennell, Promising Young Woman explains the reasons for this character transformation through a slow reveal. Suffice it to say that it involves a crime that was committed against Cassandra's friend and that set Cassandra on a path of revenge directed toward any man she can sucker into trying to take advantage of her. She achieves this by pretending to be too drunk to know what she's doing, and the men who fall into her trap, well, writer-director Fennell leaves that mostly up to our imagination. In any event, Cassandra's work continues until she meets Ryan, played by Bo Burnham, a pediatric surgeon who recalls her from medical school and who just might be her ticket back to something resembling a normal life. But if you believe that, then what is there about the term revenge flick that you don't understand?
And I am going to push back a little bit about the notion of revenge flick, because I think it's this particular film, Promising Young Woman, has gotten too easily characterized and put in that genre. And of course, I'm not going to deny that there are elements of this would make it an appropriate categorization. But at the same time, I think there's really more going on here than that moniker would lead us to believe is happening. And so I thought that this was more about a film about, rage, but also it was a film about sadness. It was a film about loss. It was a film about other things that our lead character, Carey Mulligan, is experiencing. Of course, I assume that Nathan's going to spend some time talking about her performance, because I think he is a true Carey Mulligan aficionado, and as well he should be, at least based on past performances, including what she does here. This film doesn't quite work. It almost works, but it sort of gets pulled off center at various points. And the relationships that she has with other people, so with Laverne Cox, who owns this cake shop or the bakery where she works as a barista, her relationship with her parents, her connecting with an old female schoolmate and so forth, there was just something that needed to happen in greater depth in each of those encounters, I guess, or those courses of dealing. But, and this is the problem with discussing this film, there's something that happens in this film in this sort of penultimate scene that, as Dan said, is one of the few times in the history of movie viewing where you're sort of gobsmacked by what transpires. And so for that alone, I give this film a lot of credit, but I'm gonna have to let you see it and you can make your own determination here. It's talking about a serious subject. It's talking about how the experience of sexual assault affects not only the person who has experienced that, but also, you know, has ramifications for others as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm drawn, I think, to protagonists who don't always do the right thing. And I feel like we're kind of in short supply of those in the, you know, the Marvel blockbuster era. Like, everything is so black and white these days. And I don't know, I guess I was not expecting this movie to give me those kinds of feelings, because even though we're on Cassie's side in Promising Young Woman, and we realize that the real problem here is the men that are taking advantage of women who can't consent. And of course, she is sort of playing that role in order to ensnare them, but they're the ones that are behaving in this way. And yet Cassie is still making choices throughout this movie that kind of belie this avenging crusade narrative that she's created for herself. I mean, there are female characters throughout this movie who deal with her in a way where we think, is she doing the right thing here? And there are even moments, I mean, you mentioned that men should be afraid of her, but there are some female characters in this movie that she is equally unforgiving to. Not just Connie Britton, but Alison Brie as her old, you know, med school, quote unquote, friend. What she does to that character is genuinely troubling and really makes you question the morality of everything that's going on here. And to me, that makes Promising Young Woman a lot more complicated and a lot thornier than a revenge plot. As you said, it's kind of been pigeonholed into that. And so you kind of get these contradictory feelings all the way through the movie, and you have to grapple with them because you're like, well, I sympathize with what she's doing here, but do I sympathize with everything that she's doing? And I wasn't expecting that kind of moral gray area to be applied to this kind of subject matter. And whether or not you think that that sort of moral gray area should be applied to this subject matter is an entirely different debate. And I don't know if you're familiar with the website Letterboxd. That's sort of like a social media diary for films where people, you know, log the movies that they watch and write about them. And last night, after I watched Promising Young Woman, I spent about an hour reading Letterboxd reviews, mostly by women, mostly the negative ones, because they ran the gamut from 5 stars all the way down to none. And I was reading things saying, this was a radical film, this is a repugnant film. And in both cases, it really made me think differently about some of the dramatic choices that Emerald Fennell makes here and about some of the plot points. And so I'm still grappling with this movie, and it's possible that the further away I get from it, I'll like it more. It's possible that it's going to, you know, its impact is going to lessen the further I get from it. But I admire that in a movie, you know, just the fact that I'm still thinking about it, that I'm still kind of debating with myself about, you know, how I should feel about some of the things in it, is, I think, to its credit. I think that's a feature, not a bug. So I think there are some people that are going to really hate this movie, and there are some people that are going to be taken by it. And I was more on the taken side than not. And again, I guess I never mentioned Carey Mulligan's performance, but it's great.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I've been waiting for her to have a performance or a role she could jump into, like the role she had in the 2011 film Shame, where there's one scene in which she sings a song and her face is the frame, and throughout the entire song, it was just a marvelous performance. And she's really good in this too. And, you know, I have to admit that I'm one of those people who, I was thrown completely off base by this movie. I woke up early the next morning, feeling shame and regret, and looking back over my life and going, how have I reacted? Have I always been the good guy? Would I have ever fallen into a situation like this? Would I have ever taken advantage of someone like this? And it's troubling. It's a troubling movie. And I think that is going to largely affect how people see it. And men will probably see this movie a lot different than women do. So, but as Mary Pat says, there comes a point in this film in which I went, yeah, I know where this is going. And then I went, what? What?
Your stomach kind of drops a little
kidding.
Bit. And whether or not you think that the way this movie wraps up works or not, I see a lot of people debating about the ending, and obviously I don't want to give it away, but I'm sort of mixed about it myself. I think that I admire its gutsiness, but I also kind of think that there's certain elements of it that are kind of a cop-out in a way. But I mean, that's kind of par for the course with this movie. You're sort of all over the place all the way through it.
Yeah, and I actually thought that the ending was perfect. It really worked well for me. I mean, after I sort of got over my, oh my, or I think we said something a little stronger than that when we were watching it at home. But I think the one thing that would have helped me in some respects is, was she taking some of these actions on behalf of all women? I think the answer is yes, but was she taking them specifically because of her friendship and her relationship with Nina? And I think that was it, but maybe a little bit more about their relationship would have been good, because it also would have balanced who she was and her, you know, relationship with other women and sort of how that worked, because obviously they were very close. They were wearing these necklaces, that girls in middle school typically would wear, you know, the sort of broken heart kind of necklace and so forth. So, you know, you were left to wonder, was there any sort of love relationship between the two of them that might have been physically intimate? Was there, you know, what else might have been going on here? She's still struggling with her guilt because she didn't go to the party. But yeah, so I would have appreciated maybe a little bit more backstory than what we got.
And that was Promising Young Woman. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Pieces of a Woman. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from the poet and author Nikita Gill. Some days I am more wolf than woman. And I am still learning how to stop apologizing for my wild. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.